Hey everybody, welcome to Beyond the Matrix. I'm still around. I bet you're wondering, I wonder if Patricia's going to be off gallivanting into the Maya lands or Egypt or wherever, but no, I'm here and coming to you live with a very, very exciting guest this evening. I always have to remember, it's evening where I am, it's daytime where most of you are, and where my guest is, who knows what time it is, she's from Australia. Oh, don't know if she's from Australia, but she's there now. Her name is Stephanie South. Oh, man. The book is called The Man Behind the 2012 Phenomenon, about José Arguelles, one of the great visionaries of our time. The main title of the book is 2012 Biography of a Time Traveler. How does that sound? Like Beyond the Matrix material. So before I bring her on, I just want to remind you all that time for the Crop Circle Tour is coming to a close. I've still got a few places left, but I've got to wrap it up. So if you want to join me under the guidance of the Sirian Star, trudging through those crop circles, getting into those temporary temples, one of the most important things, I believe, happening on the planet now, send an email, patcorey@tiscalynet.it, and sign up, because I promise you a journey of extraordinary shifting. Okay, that's my blurb for the moment. Let me bring on the talented, really magnificent writer, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. What time is it there on your side of the world?
It is 5 a.m.
Oh, you're such a trooper. Thank you for getting up to this hour to join us on Beyond the Matrix. I hope it'll be worth it for you. Let me just tell you a little brief about Stephanie. She's a former journalist. Former journalist, now full-time writer, and co-author of the 7-volume Cosmic History Chronicles, of which the first 4 have already been published. Those are called The Book of the Throne, The Book of the Avatar, Book of the Mystery, and Book of the Initiation. Sounds intriguing. She's currently working on the 5th volume of this series called The Book of the Time Space. And, of course, she's produced this amazing book that I'm working my way through slowly because I want to savor every word. She met José Arguelles in 1998. After a series of dreams in which he demonstrated time travel and telepathy. We're going to hear about how he linked up with her then. And we're also going to hear about a project they're both working on now called the Noosphere 2 Project, an investigation into the nature of time and cosmic states of consciousness. Whoa, get ready to go on a journey to today. Thanks, Stephanie. Boy, where do we start? This is such an incredible book. It's so full of information. And, of course, temple of love to José Arguelles, the visionary, as I said, of our time. Yeah. How did you meet and become involved with José Arguelles?
Well, I first met him, as it says, at the 28th annual Whole Earth Festival in Davis, California, that he had started in 1970 when he was a college professor. But before that, you know, I hadn't heard much of him. I'd heard a little bit about the harmonic convergence, but I really didn't know exactly who he was. But before that, I had, several dreams where a man was demonstrating telepathy and time travel, as you said. And when I first heard José speak or I met him, I recognized him as the man who had been in my dream. And the first time that I heard him speak at the Whole Earth Festival, he was speaking about how the world is living in artificial time. And something about his words really, really woke me up.
That's remarkable. This is one of my areas of discussion constantly as well. So I was particularly intrigued with that aspect of the book. But, you know, it's only one of so many threads through the book that, I'll see what we can do to get through so many of the main concepts in just the short time we have together today. Harmonic convergence.
Yeah, we're working on. Yes.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I thought we had the connection there.
No.
I was going to say that I just wanted to add that, you know, working on this book and learning about Jose's works are so vast that I felt that it all had to be put into some kind of a template in order that other people could understand, you know, the different experiences and the different teachings that he's brought through. And the one that most people remember, of course, is the Harmonic Convergence of 1987.
Yeah, in fact, that's really, as far as I can remember, that's the first time I ever heard of Jose Arguelles as well.
Right.
Can you talk about that, his theories on, he was the one who put together the Harmonic Convergence as far as awakening people to this important time on the planet, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the Harmonic Convergence it took place August 16th and 17th, 1987. And he had been given those dates about in the early 1970s. Those were prophetic dates of a closing of a certain cycle of Quetzalcoatl. And so he had been given those dates, but he didn't realize that it would lead to the Harmonic Convergence. And the Harmonic Convergence, it marked the first time that human beings simultaneously came together at sacred sites. Many didn't even know what was pulling them there. And they coordinated their prayers and their meditations and their ceremonies all over the planet. And like I said, there was some kind of a magnetic pull that many people described feeling. And it resulted in millions of people, simultaneously coordinating all their prayers on behalf of the planet Earth. And like I said, Jose had been given this date in the early 1970s, and it was basically the fulfillment of a prophecy that opened the portals to 2012, to the 25-year countdown to 2012.
And when you say he was given it, are you talking about his guides, spiritual guides, or?
No, he was actually given it.
This opens up a whole big field early on in our discussion. But was he connecting with the Galactic Maya, or was this his?
Yeah,
what kind of guidance was it that was bringing him this information?
Yeah, it was both the Galactic Maya and in the early 1970s, he met a man named Tony Shearer, who was a Native American poet and storyteller. And Tony had been given those dates by a female shaman, a curandera, some years earlier. And he passed those dates on to Jose. It was the closing, like I said, of the prophecy of Quetzalcoatl, which is like the Mexican mythic culture bringer. He is a big character in ancient Mexico. And so he received these dates from Tony Shearer. And then in 1983, you know, Jose had these dates and he was aware of them, but he had a really strong visionary experience in 1983 where he saw the Harmonic Convergence. What he saw was all the humans gathered in circles all over the planet with their heads like lying down flat with all of their heads facing a fire in the circle. And he kept hearing the words Earth Surrender Rite. And so he immediately knew that it related to the Harmonic Convergence and that he had to do something to pull all the people together at that time.
And how do you see, or how does the Harmonic Convergence relate to 2012 in his theories of these important synchronistic moments on the planet?
Because the Harmonic Convergence, of course, it's one of the prophecies, and that really the prophecy opened from August 16th, 1987 to 2012, and basically he feels that 2012 is the big Harmonic Convergence, that the Harmonic Convergence is just...
It's the big banana, as we say. And there's so much expectation about 2012, as I'm sure you're well aware. And I always like to draw this into my conversations because so many people are eager to get some, let's say, some pretty profound information about it, not just speculation. And I would consider information from Jose profound information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so much out there now. It's just a lot of doomsday stuff.
A lot of doomsday stuff, exactly, which is one of the reasons why I do my best to help people understand in my humble experience of teaching that the vision, the Mayan vision, was the end of a great cycle, the beginning of a new one, and not the end of everything. And people really have a problem grasping even death, which is, if you know anything about the Tarot, the death card is a transition from one form of existence to another.
Exactly.
So how does Jose describe this new cycle that we're going into?
Well, first of all, he sees the 2012, how he sees it as the shifting of timing frequencies, or basically we're leaving one time or the end of one cycle and we're entering into a whole other cycle, and this whole other cycle he sees as being more in the nature of spiritual consciousness exploration, rather than so materialist or dense or money oriented. Let's say it's kind of, he says that the paradigm.
Sorry, everybody. We've had a line drop with Stephanie, so we're getting her back on. That's what you get when you try to connect three different corners of the planet. So bear with us a moment while we bring her back. In the meantime, imagine, you know, what an honor to have spent so much time with a truly great visionary like Jose Arguelles. Most of you will be familiar with his book, The Mayan Factor, which is not an easy book to read, and his other book, Time in the Technosphere, but the one that really brought him out into the public was The Mayan Factor. So I'm going to ask Stephanie to elaborate as much as possible on the significance of those Mayan time cycles and the Mayan calendar and how it all culminates at this moment that we're so close to now. 2012, December 21st, seemed like it was so far away, and here we are just a few years from it. And in fact, spinning and spinning and spinning into whole new territories for humankind, breaking down the old and awakening to new ways of perceiving our lives and the planet. So we're just waiting for her to come back.
Okay, I think we're on.
Oh, great. Okay, great. I filled up the time talking about, just briefly talking about Mayan Factor as being the real, for me, the real breakthrough book from Jose, and wondering if you could, how in the world does one summarize the Mayan Factor and the wisdom he brought through in that book?
You know, the easiest way I've found to summarize it is basically all of Jose's works are based on three things, which is time, synchronicity, and art. And the Mayan Factor really paints the picture of the cycle that's closing and then the new cycle that's opening. And it shows that the cycle from the beginning of history, 3113 BC to 2012, was a whole, was the cycle of history, or the cycle of time is money, the cycle of male dominance, the cycle of basically the historical cycle. And that was one huge cycle that played out to see kind of what kind of civilization that the humans would create. And now we're entering a whole other cycle, which is in 2012, 2013. And, of course, he has a strong connection with the galactic Maya, which have been, which he's had many experiences of them basically monitoring all the affairs of our third-dimensional reality down here and watching this whole program play out, and that this whole program has been foreseen by ancient seers long, long ago.
Indeed. Well, people will be wondering, who are the Galactic Maya? Would you like to enlighten us?
Right. Well, the Galactic Maya, according to Jose's works, are, basically star travelers or time travelers that incarnated here at a specific time to seed seed the planet or leave clues of the planet of our planetary being or our collective, our galactic kind of being. And they left the clues for this stage of our transformation when basically we would reconnect with those higher dimensional beings at the time of 2012, 2013. And they left, many glyphs and clues which Jose's actually, spent his entire life studying and decoding and receiving a lot of information about the big shift and about basically the return of the Maya. And of course Maya ultimately means illusion, but the galactic Maya were basically masters of time travel, telepathy, all of those paranormal powers that we're actually supposed to be embodying. It's just that we've been cut off from our paranormal powers due to living in a world that's of artificial time.
Well, would you define then artificial time as being an element of being in the third dimension, an aspect of being in the third dimension?
I'm sure that we're both
headed here is that we are moving into another dimension, a higher dimension.
Yeah, we're moving from basically
out of time,
ruling,
out of the limits of a dimension that's ruled by artificial time. Yeah?
Yeah, from the third dimension to the fourth dimension, exactly. Like the third dimension of just like right now everybody on some level is really space oriented. Just a lot of people, what they can see is what there is, but we know that there's a whole other story that's playing out beyond the matrix or behind the matrix. And so basically it's coming into more and more consciousness of what's behind this third-dimensional world that we see, this world of appearance. And so it's basically becoming more conscious and really beginning to become even more conscious co-creators of this particular reality that we're all involved in. And that,
especially if we remember that when you say the world that we see, we need to remember that it's the world that we think we see.
The world that we think we see, yeah.
Because we see a lot more than we rationally believe we see. I'm sure you agree that, people will say, there 20 people will look at something and there will be 20 different experiences of what they're seeing, depending on their evolution, depending on their capabilities. And that's very exciting. And I like to tell people when I'm teaching to remember always that even the star systems that we see are possibly not even there anymore, and that is the greatest description of illusion. Some of them are, if you've got a star that is 200,000 light years away from the Earth, then it could have already burned out, and that light is still shining down.
Yeah, exactly. That's really true. It's almost like we're all living some strange memory. On some level.
Yeah. But it really helps people get the idea because they just don't think about that, that the whole celestial canopy that we look at could not be there anymore. And if that isn't illusion, I don't know what is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And now that there's almost, 7 billion people, it's been 7 billion different perceptions.
Exactly. We've got to get it together.
Yeah.
Being galactic is one of my favorite things because I have spent a lot of my life being connected to the stars. I'm curious about, in the book you talk about the AA Midway Station as being part of the Galactic Federation, and I had never heard this talked about before. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, the AA Midway Station, that's kind of, Jose had many experiences of directly experiencing. The AA Midway Station is a type of monitoring base, like between the fourth and fifth dimensions is how he experienced it. And he experienced being there and what he saw there was, like a whole bunch of monitoring screens that were simultaneous views of what was happening on this planet and on other planets and on other star systems. It's kind of like being taken to the central control panel and watching the whole timing of the entire, universal program. And he understood that there was a complete record of activities. Maybe you could call it the Akashic record, or but all of all the events and everything that occurs on Earth. I mean, the AA Midway Station is basically like the place where all of this information is stored, and where all the surveillance of all the, like, say, all the higher intelligences are surveying this entire grand cosmic unfolding that we're all going through. And so he witnessed different aspects of the unfolding and saw how important it was for the Earth, like how important that the Earth was in this whole evolutionary process.
Wow, you know, as much as I love the idea that there is intelligence overseeing all of the unfolding of the planetary bodies, it just really bothers me to think that we've got more giant screens of surveillance out there behind the dimension.
Well, that's the best way to...
Yes, I know. But, you know,
yeah.
Of course...
Well, I guess...
Yeah, I was just going to say that we are certainly seeing this developing on our planet, too. I always wonder what the real reason is for the intensity of this upsurge in monitoring every individual on the planet at the time that we're going through 2012.
Well, it seems like that like what he experienced at the AA Midway Station, how we think of monitoring is really limited on Earth, because we see how, you know, we've got monitor screens and you're being filmed every time you go to the bank and all that. That's kind of how we think about it. But I think that, you know, the way that he experienced it was much more magical, I think, than that. It's just sometimes hard to put into the human language, because we have so many concepts, especially about what's happening right now with all of the surveillance and everything. But the basic thing was that we're headed for major synchronization, and that this whole program is like a time release program, and it has everything to do with synchronicity and with time, and of basically returning the Earth back to a work of art.
Oh, it's so refreshing to be able to give people this kind of perspective, because, and from someone as grounded and at the same time empowered with quite a number of incredible gifts, such as Jose, that he has the ability to bring this in and still has the credibility of, well, let's say Mind Factor is a very academic work. So putting these two things together gives us a very positive perspective on the true depth of the Mayan wisdom and their ability to predict, or let's say prophesize, about what was coming, and that it's a positive shift.
Right. Yeah, and one other factor of the Mayan factor, one of the main things, is that the information that he received from the Maya was basically that we were, in 2012, we were basically passing out of a particular galactic beam, and the galactic beam represents the cycle of history. And if you can just imagine that, like, there's different galactic beams. For example, at one time there were dinosaurs, and then before you knew it, they were extinct. And so we're passing from one time to another time. And so this other time, I think, is really still on some level, it's all of our collective dream, and it's so important. That's why it's so important that we're putting out positive visions right now of what we all want to create as the next, of the next world.
Indeed, and I think the fact that we're being squeezed to death with every kind of scenario of doom between the economy and the global, we won't even discuss the warrior world, as we're being forced, I hate to use that word, but let's say, squeezed into letting go of everything that we considered security and safety, and being made to look to the values that are in some ways polar to all of this negative stuff that's going on. Learning that you don't need the glitzy house, you don't need the big salary, you don't even need the job to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
It's very Buddhist in a way.
And like you said, it's like we're going through a huge planetary initiation, both personally and the planet. I mean, we're all, everybody, at least that I talk to, is really feeling, you know, both personally and planetarily, that we're definitely going through a huge transition time. And, you know, how that's perceived according to the 2012 prophecy is that basically when you come to the end of the cycle, all the accumulated karma from all of history and even from, like, the lost worlds and things all gets brought up to the present moment to be hopefully resolved and released.
And do you not think that whatever karmic debt we have as a planet, some of this with us into the next dimension? I do. I feel that it's not going to be automatically released, that we are given an opportunity to raise the vibration of the planet
in
density now, but that in shifting to this new dimension, I really don't think we're going to have an instant orgasm and everything's going to be fine.
Right.
Like a lot of people fantasize of the heaven and hell metaphor. I think that, we'll be looking at every single layer of karma that's been created on this planet and have a chance or an opportunity to raise it, but we still go into the new carrying this in. Do you agree with that?
I understand what you're saying, and I think that the full palette is open. I think that anything could happen. It could be that, or it could be on some level that the big galactic refresh button gets pushed and everything becomes new, or it could be that we have to carry, you know, I think it's really according to each of our consciousness what we experience.
Yeah. Oh, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
And what about the sun?
Yeah, but it's
Talk about the sun. You talk about in the book how the sun emits patterns of energy information. This is really synchronistic with the way I see things. How do these patterns coincide with the Tolkien? How do you pronounce that? Tolkien?
The Tolkien?
Tolkien calendar.
The Tolkien?
Let's talk about the sun and how I perceive that the sun knows exactly what it's doing. It is working to purify and prepare the earth for this transition. I'd like to know your and Jose's feelings about this.
Yeah, well, he, you know, feels that, of course, the Tolkien is the 260-day count, and he saw that basically the Tolkien correlates to the binary sunspot cycles, and that basically the sun is operating through a galactic program, or all of our, I mean, since all of life comes from the sun, all of the programs are kind of like solar programs that we're receiving, and that the sun is continuously emitting different patterns and energy and information. But, you know, the binary sunspot cycles are 23-year cycles, and the next one peaks in 2012, which is pretty interesting.
Exactly. Which is interesting because I thought the solar cycles were 11 years, but regardless, so it's the end of a solar cycle, and it's also the end of the great cycle.
Right. Yeah, the sun
cycle. So it will be very interesting to see what the sun is doing in this time.
Yeah, and a lot of people say, like, at this moment there's zero sun activity. It's abnormally quiet right now, but that other people feel like that's because it's getting ready to, you know, peak in 3 years, and there's a lot of different theories about what's going to happen when that occurs. Even NASA has a lot of papers and things about the potential that a solar flare could hit, for example, and blow out the electromagnetic grid. There's all sorts of different theories about how it's all going to evolve or unfold.
Yeah, the government usually talks about the negative aspect of what's going to unfold.
Yeah, that's true.
Astronomically.
But at the same time,
you know, it's always dim. Yeah. It's, you know, asteroids, the sun is going to melt the earth, and all strange. But I think that the sun is a conscious being, and that it knows exactly what to do, and that when we remember that all planetary bodies are conscious beings, then we would have to believe, if we believe that we are, in fact, entering a new cycle, and if we embrace the ideas of the Maya, then by nature of those beliefs, we would have to also embrace the idea that the sun knows exactly what to do and is like you said, part of the galactic scheme of things.
Yeah, exactly. But it is true, it is an interesting contemplation that, you know, there's a good possibility also of the, you know, it's already been, we see how fragile the system is, like with the internet and our communication system. If an earthquake occurs and the internet goes down, or this happens and the internet goes down, but that, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. On one level, if the internet is just the virtual telepathy, it's like, now is the time for us to really begin to cultivate a mind and the telepathy, because we should ultimately reach a stage where we can communicate with anyone who we need to communicate with through our minds.
I agree completely, and I also think that that's, again, why it has to come down is because we have to trust that we have these capacities and start to use them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I think that a lot of people are really awakening to these incredible gifts that we have innate within us, especially with so much work that people are doing on the spiritual level. I mean, I see so much of a boom in the number of people that are waking up on this planet.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. It's happening rapidly. I mean, it feels like, you know, whatever anyone thinks about 2012, with, you know, there's all this stuff happening around it, but on some level it's also like a trigger in the DNA, because everyone, many, many people who wouldn't have thought of so-called spiritual things or this or that are starting to be activated just by hearing that date. And so it's definitely creating some kind of awakening for, you know, some people choose to go negative with it and some people go positive. But I don't know if you know, but there's a huge 2012, it looks horrible, disaster movie coming out in November, and it's a huge Hollywood big budget movie. And so it's kind of interesting, because many people, like in smaller towns and stuff, haven't really heard about the 2012, so it's kind of, you know, I know it's all in the plan, but it's also kind of disappointing that the first take on it is going to be some big disaster film.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then that is the mandate that certain media people have, don't you think?
Right.
Keep people in fear. As long as you can keep the masses in fear, you can control them.
Yeah.
I think that the powers on this planet just don't know what to do with a society of a civilization of 7 billion free-thinking people.
Exactly.
So let's keep them in poverty, in hunger, in fear, and despair, and let them know that we have the solution, and then you've got control.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's definitely all playing out right now.
Yeah, it's interesting sitting here and watching it, I'll tell you that. But I really am utterly positive in the idea that we are moving rapidly toward a great awakening.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's really exciting and makes it such an exciting time to be alive right now.
Indeed. Speaking of exciting things going on right now, of course there's a lot of discussion about disclosure, about the extraterrestrial connection, and obviously Jose has that connection. So I was wondering, can you tell us what he feels is the ET connection in relationship to what will be unfolding in 2012?
Like I said, he feels that, well, first of all, he really feels that the ETs are misunderstood, of course, by the masses of how everybody perceives them. But, you know, he's had a lot of, I guess what you might call contact, of course, over the years, and he's really felt that, you know, basically his higher dimensional intelligence that he's been in contact or in touch with that led to the calling for the harmonic convergence and to different things that he's done throughout his life was basically, I guess, channeled from higher dimensional beings. And so I think that, you know, what we got back to before, we know we don't like to use the word monitoring, but that there, but this is like higher intelligence, but it basically, say, watching over or guiding the whole evolutionary unfolding, and you know, and that the UFOs, you know, that the UFOs that are being spotted, you know, how he views the UFOs are basically like interdimensional, Earth-generated, like galactically programmed, like information bearers, basically for us. So, yeah, there's a lot of you know, the extraterrestrials, but he's always careful to not bring the focus too much on that, just because people tend to sensationalize it. I know your listeners are more, you know, more understanding of all of that, but yeah, definitely he's been in contact and still is with higher dimensional entities.
Yeah, well, I think it's really important that people understand the difference between extra-dimensional, and I also am a channel for higher beings, and extraterrestrial.
Right.
Which right. People would perceive as possibly three-dimensional beings that are flying around in ships. And there's, of course, a perennial debate about whether these are just holograms or what. But there sure is a lot of buzz about this. And I can't help but wonder if we're going to, you know, have some kind of a breakthrough on that front right around the time of of so much else coming. I personally think we are. It looks like
we're
about to make contact.
That for sure. Yeah.
What do you think about the crop circles? Have you or has Jose been into the crop circles?
No, I haven't been in, and I don't believe he's seen a few of them, but we definitely feel like they're part of the signs of the next cycle.
They're amazing. And each year has another bent to it. If you'd like, I'll send you information, because I'm going, I go every year. And
oh, that'd
I'll
be great.
Insights. Yeah, they're really remarkable. Let me ask you this. We know about the discoveries years ago on Mars, about the proverbial face on Mars. And you mentioned this, saying that it had a big significance for Jose. Can you elaborate on what this meant to him?
Yeah, you know, he was shown the face on Mars by Dick Hoagland, who many people know of, that used to work
including
for NASA. And he was shown the face on Mars in 1983, and when he saw it, what it did for him, it was like a memory trigger of times on other planets or on other worlds, and it really blasted him open, and it was just like 4 days after he saw the face on Mars that he had this huge vision about the harmonic convergence. This is in 1983, and so kind of like that kind of quickened, or it was one of those wake up calls that accelerates your consciousness or your evolution as soon as he saw that.
That's amazing.
He felt like,
and you talk about the Arcturians and the Antarians keeping an eye on Mars. Can we discuss what they're watching for? Do we believe that there is civilization on Mars now, or is it, let's say, Earth beings that have burrowed in under the surface?
Right. Yeah, the feeling that occurred to him was that the Arcturians, were one of the monitors of all of this, and that basically, that there was a civilization on Mars, and preceding Mars, a civilization on Maldek, which is now known as the asteroid belt. And so the story or the information that he received from the Arcturians was that there, first of all, there was life on Maldek. That was like the original Garden of Eden, and something occurred, some kind of dissonance, and the planet actually blew, and that's the asteroid belt, and that all of the karma from that lost planet was transferred to Mars, which created a civilization, and basically that became extinct, and so then all of the karma from both of those lost planets was transferred onto the Earth.
Wow, we have a lot of karma.
That's the story, but that's why the different, you know, a lot of times we have different, you know, experiences or we go through different things and we can't quite place them in as experiences that we've had in this world, like deja vus and things. So obviously we, you know, we were all on another world together, and this time we're back to kind of hopefully try to correct some of the karma and lift the vibration of this planet the best that we can during this incarnation.
Yeah, I had Michio Kaku, the genius of physics, on my show.
Oh, yeah.
And he, I'm sure you know of his work. And we talked about this aspect of even deja vu, as these dimensions are so close to us that they could really be right under your nose. And takes to shift into that other dimension is something that they're working on discovering, but that deja vu very easily could be just slipping in to that other dimension where the activity that you're going through has already played out in a nanosecond from when you're now experiencing it. So fascinating.
Yeah, and it seems like people, at least that I've talked to, are experiencing those points more and more. And a lot of people talk about the 11-11 time prompts and the different kind of little flashes of other dimensions that kind of happen so fast that you can't fully remember everything, but you wish that you could.
Right. We're so in sync. I just had the author of that book, The 11-11 Time Prompt, on the show. So much great work is coming out now. It's very exciting.
Oh, that's great.
All right, so what do you think? I like to remind people when they say they don't believe in extraterrestrials. I say, why not? We're on Mars, there are extraterrestrials. And they go, oh, you're so foolish. And I say, there are. It's you, it's us. We've got robots on Mars.
Yes. Yeah.
Try to get your head around the language that you use. But the truth is, we've had two, maybe three now, robotic craft on Mars for how many years? People just don't think about it. What are those craft doing up there? Are they still photographing rocks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What is your opinion?
I had the experience in the very first time in 2000, I was taken to Palenque, Chiapas, Mexico, and the night that we landed there, we stayed the night, and I've never experienced UFOs before, but that night there was a group of about 8 of us, and it was the day before we were actually going to go to the Temple of Inscriptions in Palenque, and the sky was filled with UFOs. Like, there was just no doubt about that they were UFOs, and we looked and we actually saw a huge, huge, huge mothership. And a couple of the people were UFOlogists who were in our group, and, you know, and they had never seen anything like that. And so, and the feeling, or the inner feeling that came with that was indescribable. And so I'm definitely convinced, and that was, you know, in Palenque, like landing in Palenque. So I'm definitely convinced that there's something going on with all of it.
It's very exciting that you mentioned Palenque, because I'm just back from there. I go there a lot, and I work with the shamans there.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, was the last time I was there, I was embraced into the family of the shamans of the Lokandun tribe and asked to be one of the 4 guardians of Palenque.
Wow. They're amazing.
Along
people.
With the Lokandun people are, of course, the direct descendants of Pakal, and the 4 spirit guardians of Palenque are Kayun, the shaman who really protects the temple, Jose Antonio Viejo, who is an elder, Hun Batmen, and I was asked to join this group, which you can imagine.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's quite remarkable.
Exactly. Very important.
But
that's really fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. I'm still getting a handle on what it all means, knowing that that's where I'm going to be on December 21st. December 21st.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because as you know, Jose's work is all based on the prophecy of Pakavotan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where all of the, that's where it all, or the origin point of all of it.
Indeed. Did you manage to get into the 2?
Yes, I did. I've been in a couple
of
times. During that time, it was, So
how
luckily
did you
I know that they're not letting, I had actually, I had met Jose at that time, and he had talked to Moises Morales, the keeper of the place, and
cool.
He let us in. Yeah.
I went there because I was asked to come by the government of the tourist government of Chiapas, and when the man who was facilitating my journey asked me what I wanted to do, and I of course told him I wanted to go in the tomb, and he said nobody gets in there, Patricia. He said not even the diplomats. He said even I am the big. I don't want to mention his position, but one of the top guys in the tourist department. He said even I haven't been in. And so when I went, he made an appointment for me to meet with the director. And she looked into my eyes, and she said, you know, what do you want to do? I have an order here to show you whatever you want to see. And I just looked at her, and I said, well, and she said, do you want to see the tomb? And I was choked.
Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and she said, we don't ever let anyone in, but I feel compelled to open it for you. So, needless to say, that was
quite a powerful
experience.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful to know that you've been in there too. I would like to elaborate on that at length with you because my experiences there were so emotional, so powerful, but they're also very personal.
Yeah, exactly. I had similar.
But definitely. You saw Mothership at Palenque. That is remarkable.
I did, and I'd never, like I said, and I haven't since seen anything like that. And there's no question. We had some skeptics in our group who couldn't deny what we saw that night. And it's really in a huge, like I said, a huge mothership. That's the only way to describe it. And so that was
pretty intense breakthrough information for skeptics.
Yeah, exactly. That was
the welcome to the other world.
Description. Yeah. Yeah, so...
Who are you studying and work with Jose Aguilar? What have you learned in the big screen about how to approach 2012? How do you advise people in your work to prepare for this and to understand that it's not a finite date and that we proceed from there?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I feel like we're already, that the shift has already begun and we're already going through it. But
indeed,
you know, Jose promotes and has promoted because he feels that basically, you know, we have to change our relationship with time, like of what is time and what is time travel, what is the exploration of time, because we've totally exhausted, in a way, the exploration of space, like just, you know, the material plane, the horizontal plane, and time is the fourth dimension or the vertical time. And he has promoted, you know, through years and years of study and experiments with different, living in different cycles of time, he found that the living by the 13 moon 28 day calendar, which is based on the Mayan Vulcan, the 260 day count meshed with our 365 day solar count, that he found that it absolutely increases your levels of consciousness and basically tunes you into a whole other reality just by following different cycles of time because, you know, the Mayans at their height, they were using up to 17 calendars at a time, but they didn't view time like we view time. They viewed it more like, you know, mapping the night skies and synchronizing different events and different star systems. So that's what, you know, I've been using this 13 moon 28 day calendar since 1998, and I can definitely attest to it definitely shifts your frequency out of the 12 month Gregorian calendar and the 60 minute clock, but you really have to try it to feel the effects that it has on your consciousness are profound.
In fact, I don't wear a watch. I think it's at least been 15 years that I don't use a watch. And people are always blown away by the fact that I can tell them the time almost to the minute sometimes. And when they ask me why, I say, well, first of all, it's just being tuned in. And secondly, you become, when you don't use this crutch, you become more aware of the sun's position in the sky.
Exactly.
Although, of course, sun is really, it's the earth that's changing position. But anyway, you become so much more in tune with nature and with the natural progression of the spheres that you are empowered by getting rid of this tool.
Yeah, exactly. And if you combine that with living in the different cycles, it's really interesting. You know, the 13 moon calendar, I know your show is it Sirius? It has to do with Sirius Revelations?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? But this calendar, it begins on July 26th, which is the heliacal rising of Sirius. And the Egyptians used a similar 13 moon calendar that was pivoted, like the New Year's Day is July 26th, you know, because, and it's based on 52-year cycles. But anyway, living in this different cycle, your mind gets pulled from the Gregorian grid, let's say, that's like programmed with different, you know, with the different holidays and the different weekends. I mean, you can still plug all of these into the 13 moon calendar if you wish, but at the same time, it's like using a new lens to view reality.
Does the book talk about this calendar?
It does, yeah. It talks about how he discovered that and how he began living in different cycles of time. First, like, 13-day cycle is a big one. Just starting to be aware of, like, the every 13 days. And, you know, I'm actually, it's going to be available in about 2 weeks. I'm creating a 13-moon star traveler's almanac of synchronicity, and it's based on Jose's works, and it's pivoted. You know, July 26th is coming up not too far away, so it's going to be available in a couple weeks, and it hopefully makes it really easy for people to understand and begin living in these cycles.
That is going to be a wonderful gift that you're giving the world. How can people find out about getting themselves a copy of this?
Yeah, it should be up soon on www.lawoftime.org, and I'm really excited about this.
I am too. I'll be one of your first purchasers.
Yeah, well, I'll send you a copy.
That would be great. I'd love to, and if you'd like, I'll send you a copy of one of my books of Syrian transmissions, and let's make that link.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Although we already have the link, clearly, just from talking to you, but I'd love to share that with you as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, well, before we go, I'd like to ask you, is there one, you know, geez, can you imagine we've already gone through an hour? It never stopped talking about time.
Yeah, I know.
Time flying. In fact, that is one commonality that I think is very important at the moment. People of every walk of life are talking about the fact that they can feel there's something different about the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even the most skeptical people are saying the time is not what it used to be. I don't have enough hours in the day, and they're starting to get the feeling of slipping out of the time zone.
Yeah, it feels like that.
So, yeah, I was going to say, before we leave, is there anything that you'd particularly like to leave with the audience of people who have been listening to you this day?
I think that basically now is really, really the time more than ever to really discover what your inner calling is, or what your inner gifts are, or to really create what your art is and what you have to bring to the planet at this time, because we need to do everything we can to lift the vibration here, and we need the planet needs all of our love and all of our light and all of our all of our creation. And so, and I think also just really, really starting to explore the nature of time, find out about what the Gregorian calendar that you use actually is, and find out and begin experimenting and living in different cycles, because I guarantee you it'll change your consciousness and raise your frequency. And you can get the book 2012 Biography of a Time Traveler at www.amazon.com or Barnes and Noble's. And I really encourage everybody to read the book, not just because I did it, but because I think that Jose has many different messages that are really relevant to the time that we're living in, that he that hopefully comes through in this book, and trying to tell the story of his life, but also trying to give, you know, the clues for the time that we're living in, and maybe what we can do during this transition time.
For sure. what better way to approach another dimension where there is no time than to start practicing how it feels to let go of it by exploring these other calendars? I think it's fascinating, and I can't wait to see this calendar that you're, this almanac that you're producing. And, of course, the book, 2012, Biography of a Time Traveler, not only an engaging journey through the inner and outer realms of this visionary José Arguelles, but shedding light on the crisis of the planet and how we can realign with natural time, how we can balance the planet and make a peaceful transition on December 21st, 2012, which, by the way, I want to, like you said, we're already in the shift. I don't think a big bell is going to ring on that day. We're in it, sailing through, exploring a whole new way to be residents of planet Earth.
Yes.
Stephanie, it's been personally an incredible gift to have you, to speak to you, someone so close to me. Would you please also give him my love and tell him that I am deeply honored that I've been able to just brush close to him, having had you with us today.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And also, please note, I will be in Italy with him in September for a week-long Earth Wizards workshop.
Where?
Just so you know. And, gosh, I can't remember the name of it right now.
Let me know. I will be there.
Sister Nina. Sister Nina, is that right?
Sister Nina? Please write it to me in an email, and I will plan to be there.
Okay,
synchronistically.
I hope we can meet you.
I will be in Italy in September.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Hopefully we can
meet. All right, we've got to say goodbye to Stephanie. Once again, her website is
www.south-timetraveler.com.
www.south-timetraveler.com. Get this book. It is going to blow your mind. It is so full of wisdom and experience and the depth of who this man is and Stephanie's interpretation with all of her wisdom to bringing this out to us all. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. Can't wait to see you in Italy.
Okay.
All right, everybody, that's it for tonight. Today, your time. Next week, do not miss the show. I have some speakers from Paradigm Research Group, and the argument of the day is disclosure with a big exclamation point. You're going to want to hear what they have to say as we move toward the new dimension, the higher state of consciousness. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, www.SyrianRevelations.net. It's been a wonderful, wonderful hour, and I'll be with you next Thursday. Ciao, ciao.